Welcome to another edition of the Baseball America podcast. This is J.J. Cooper here with Ben Badler, and this is not the greatest day in baseball by any stretch, but we're recording this a couple of hours after the Mitchell report came out, and kind of there's a feeling like if political reporters had the Star report where they were pouring through it, you know, and trying to get everything out of it as quickly as they could, kind of that feel a little bit today for us baseball reporters, it seems like.
Yeah, there's a lot of interesting names on the list, and a lot of, I think, more almost as interesting as the names, probably even more so, is the incredible amount of evidence behind it and how seemingly well supported a lot of the reporting was on it by the Mitchell in the Mitchell report. There's a lot of paper trails that really surprised me that players were willing to put their own names and their own bank accounts on there. There's a lot of really solid evidence in there to really do some damage to a lot of these players' reputations.
It did spell out, like, when you're seeing, you know, FedEx receipts and checks and all that, I mean, it's really, it's, for once, we're not hearing the old adage of, well, I took a supplement and it must have been tainted. I mean, this spells it out here in, you know, we're getting, in this report, we're getting that I injected on these days, I injected Roger Clemens with Winstrol in his buttocks, you know, and we saw the effects immediately. And it's exacting in its detail. But it is also, I mean, it's kind of that, it almost has a feel of that tip of the iceberg. We're talking about three sources here that we're able to get all these names out of, essentially a clubby and a trainer. What would have been, you know, what would this report have even been if there was like this blanket immunity where everyone actually felt free to talk?
Right, and this, of course, is in no way a comprehensive list of, or some kind of master list of all of the players who have used performance-enhancing drugs throughout baseball, and that's pretty clear that, I mean, George Mitchell didn't have any subpoena power here. He was basically just going off what he has here, and the amount of evidence that he has, and the way he lays it out. I think there's a lot of concern, too, going into the before the Mitchell report was released, you know, is this going to be a lot of hearsay? Is this going to be a lot of, just a lot of speculation without any real hard, solid evidence? No, this is a lot of very solid evidence working against these players here.
And in almost every case in the report, what you see is we then confronted player X with this knowledge, and he declined to comment. Mm-hmm. And you see that over and over and over, which makes sense. The Players Association basically told the players, don't cooperate with this. But it at the same time, it is kind of adding into that credibility of this report that they did give a chance for every player who is named in this to rebut it, and very few of them took the opportunity to attempt to rebut it, which I don't want to, you know, I mean, these guys seem, you know, the evidence seems pretty clear, but if you were completely innocent of these charges, it seems like it'd be very hard to just sit back and go, no, you know, I don't want to comment on it.
Mm-hmm. Right, and certainly I'm sure the MLB Players Association sent out a letter to the players and the Players Association telling them probably not to cooperate with the report and telling of the possible negative ramifications of it. And it's certainly understandable why they might not want to cooperate with them, but I think the next step probably going forward is Congress going to look at this now, and is Congress going to intervene and say, all right, we need to take another deeper look at this. Are we going to have to? Are they going to go after some of these players who are named in the report? And are they going to? Are the players now going to have to talk to Congress about it and possibly face some more serious challenges for their own personal lives and for baseball as well, in terms of what they would have faced had they cooperated with George Mitchell and his report?
I'm imagining a lot of pleading the fifth if they are called to,
oh, yeah,
called up to, you know, to a congressional hearing. One of the things I thought, though, that was very apt of what, you know, George Mitchell said was he reported about the past, but his emphasis and his recommendations were, let's not get too hung up on the past here. I mean, it's clear from this, baseball, and let's be honest, it's not just baseball. Baseball just did the best job. Baseball was slow to get around to talking about its performance-enhancing drug problem. However, baseball now has probably done the best job of exposing its problem. This is throughout all sports, really. But baseball now has spelled out, here's our problem in the past. But what Mitchell is saying is, okay, now that we have this, how can we fix it in the future? I mean, do you think this is going to be are we going to see this as the landmark moment that starts cleaning up the game, or is this going to be a report that, you know, when we look back on it 5 years from now, the same problems are going to be out there? It's just we have this report that spelled out the problems of the 90s.
Well, I think it's starting with the heavier suspensions. I think that probably started it. Once they were starting to get more media scrutiny over it, I think that probably started it. I do think the Mitchell report will be a big factor in that. One thing that I think you can see in the Mitchell report, as you look down the list of names, it's largely American names on the list. There aren't as many Latin American players who were implicated on this list. Yet certainly, what goes on in Latin America is not something that they really could have found out much about, given the sources that they talk to. There's stuff that goes on there that they probably
Right.
might never find out
Right. You'd
about.
have to find a Dominican trainer, you know, trainer from down the Dominican, or, you know, get the records not from an Orlando pharmacy, but from a Dominican pharmacy to find out some of that evidence.
Right, and good luck with
Yeah,
that.
good. Yeah,
But
not likely.
I do, well, what you were saying before about the Mitchell report looking forward, I think that the names on this list weren't necessarily the focal point of the investigation. The names were more just, and the stories behind it were just the evidence that Mitchell was using to support his case and to use as evidence for what has happened in the past, and to look going forward, say this is what's been happening, and now this is what we need to do about it going forward. So I do respect that about the way he went about his report there.
And the thing that he seems to be spelling out, I thought some of his recommendations, I don't know if they'll ever be enacted because a lot of them would require the cooperation of the Players Association. And let's not discount, I mean, the Players Association has been rather obstructionist about performance-enhancing drugs unless it's getting pushed by, essentially they eventually cave when a overwhelming majority of the players said, look, we're getting taking a beating on this. We have to adapt. But a lot of his recommendations kind of spelled out, look, just because we have the steroid testing and all now, don't in any way think that we're on top of this problem, because all it's meant is we've shifted from steroids to HGH. One of the things I thought was really interesting that he recommended is we need to have essentially, the best way I can think of it is it's almost like an MLB drug czar. You would have this guy who his job would be to track down any rumors he hears about potential drug use, and if he can find evidence on it, that guy gets suspended whether he tests positive for steroids or not. I mean, I don't know if we'll ever see that happen, but it does seem like it's about the only effective way that you're really going to stay on top of this, because everyone agrees we don't have a way to test for HGH right now. I mean, maybe you keep the samples and maybe down the road, you know, an HGH test shows up in 5 years, maybe we can go back and find out. But it does seem like the current way we're doing it can only go so far. Does that, you know, do you agree?
I do agree, and a lot of it is a lot of the designer steroids that are coming out. As science improves and improves, yes, the testing will get better, but you know, the people who make these steroids and who make the designer steroids and the HGH and all of the other other new drugs that are going to come out, they're going to be one step ahead is the problem. So, but I do think that that's the possible solution of having a drug czar, like Mitchell mentioned, would be one step, because it does need to be independent, or as independent as possible in the testing
Yeah, I
and
mean,
in the oversight of it.
and that's something that they've not had in the past. It does need to be kind of separated out. Now to put kind of the Baseball America spin on this, we're working on a story. We're recording this on Thursday afternoon. We're working on a story right now to post up on the website, baseballamerica.com, talking about going beyond. You know, we get major league names here, although a lot of these guys are kind of that 4A guy who spends a lot of time in the minor leagues. But one of the things that scouts and scouting directors are talking about now that the report's out is kind of this hope that this may change kind of the culture of baseball at, you know, for the younger player. Hopefully there may be some, you know, mind, you know, some change of mindset of whether you need to use performance enhancing drugs for the college guy, for the high school guy, and for the minor leaguer. I don't know if that's going to come from this, but it is clear from talking to scouts, it seems like that nowadays people are no longer hiding their head in the sand about performance-enhancing drugs when they're scouting a player or when you're looking at a player in the minor leagues. I mean, doesn't it seem like that nowadays it's become a part of the scouting report instead of something that 10 years ago wasn't?
Oh, absolutely. And even in the Mitchell report, you could see with not just scouting reports for younger players, but for older players, when the, according to the, George Mitchell's reports, when the Red Sox were looking at Eric Gagne in 2006, they specifically mentioned steroids. And Theo Epstein, according to the reports in the Mitchell report, said, asked one of his scouts, "What have you heard about Eric Gagne? We know the Dodgers think he's a juicer," in his words. And then the scout responded, "Yes, that we do believe that Gagne was on steroids." And the scout continued to state all these reasons why it could really hurt him. And the Red Sox didn't sign him then, but and they actually ended up trading for him. But in terms of amateur players, yeah, it's hopefully it does something to deter a lot of the younger players from using, the high school players, the college players, because at that age, it's especially unsafe for them to be using it. Obviously, they're in a growth phase for their own bodies. It can be extremely damaging for them. So it could do that. Or, on the other hand, they could look at this list and say, "Wow, these are all the guys who are using it. I mean, it seems like it's pretty prevalent. I mean, why shouldn't I use it?"
And that is one of the things that jumps out from the names on this list is that you definitely see both sides of the coin. You see the 4A guy who clearly was getting those steroids because he said, "Okay, this will be the difference between me being a big leaguer and a minor leaguer." But there also clearly are some names on here of guys. I mean, Roger Clemens was going to be a Hall of Famer without ever, probably using a thing, and he's on this list. Andy Pettitte was, one of the better pitchers in baseball on this list. I mean, we do see. It seems like it spans the entire spectrum from the guy who's fighting for that big league job to that guy who's a Hall of Famer. They're all they're some of all of them on this list, it seems like.
Yeah, and it really encompasses everybody, and I don't think that's really any kind of a shock to anybody who's been following a lot of this stuff. It's just it's hitters, it's pitchers, it's guys who are young, guys who are old. And there's obviously for those 4A guys, like you mentioned, just a huge economic incentive for them. You're a 26, 27-year-old guy in AAA, making $50,000, $60,000 a year. You're trying to crack into the major leagues. If you're in the majors for a year, I mean, you get a $250,000 raise right there. That's, I mean, in a non-baseball setting, if any job that takes you from $60,000 to at least $300,000, that's an enormous raise. I think a lot of people would do some other things to do to get that kind of a raise for
It
that
is
kind of money.
definitely, you can see where it would be very tempting,
Oh, yeah.
whether the rule was there or not. You can see, where it would be very tempting. And we'll see if this changes that. I mean, maybe now, the risk of public scorn, maybe that's the incentive that keeps people from doing it. Because, a lot of guys who really, when they were doing performance-enhancing drugs, never thought that they would ever get caught, have been exposed now. I mean, there's got to be now. Can you imagine if you're that guy who did use performance-enhancing drugs? Say you used them in 2001, 2002, and you don't know if your name's going to pop up on this or not. I mean, today had to be a pretty frightening day.
Oh, I'm sure there were plenty of guys out there who were breathing a collective sigh of relief once this report came out and their name was not on the list. I think another winner in the today is actually an executive, Dan Duquette, who after who never who didn't re-sign Roger Clemens after his tenure with the Red Sox, he left to go to Toronto, and now, according to these reports, seems like that's when Roger Clemens first started using steroids, according to the reports, and then his career really, he was obviously a great on pitcher on pace for a Hall of Fame career at that point, but the move by Duquette looks a lot better right now
Right.
in hindsight after today.
Right. It now looks like maybe it's defensible because, yes, he was on the decline in his career, and then, he Barry Bonds his way to, to another 10 years.
I like that term.
Because that's really about the same time frame we're talking about. You're talking about two guys who are Hall of Famers who all of a sudden the end part of their career doesn't match what a normal baseball player does.
Right, and their bodies are slowing down, and they probably say something to themselves like, "What's going on? I'm going on the downhill of my career." Even though they're great players, and the downhill for them is just still great, but they're not. They can't do what they used to do. They're used to pushing themselves to the limit, and their bodies are slowing down, and they want to be able to still push themselves forwards, and that's that extra edge that they can still get at that point in their careers.
Well, it is. It's a fascinating report. It'll take us a while to fully digest it, all 400, and I think 9 pages is what I counted it as.
Quite a bit.
But it is definitely a fascinating look at basically the past 10 years of baseball. It's not an exciting day for baseball any stretch today, but hopefully it is kind of the start of something new for baseball. That's the hope. I mean, because if you work at Baseball America, we all, you know, and if you listen to this podcast, there aren't probably a whole lot of people listening to this who don't love baseball. And, you know, this is kind of the day that we, you know, maybe baseball had to go through to kind of get to the other side of the mountain on this.
It's almost like an addiction where the first step is just kind of admitting the problem and trying to open up to the past and showing what you have done was wrong and then saying, all right, now what's the next step that we have to go through?
But not going to talk just about the Mitchell Report today on Baseball America weekly podcast, but we are going to talk about a guy who was in the report, Miguel Tejada, you know, in the news this week in a lot of ways, in the news today for reasons they probably wouldn't like to be in the news this week, though before, for, you know, being traded to the Astros in a I guess massive deal in quantity at least, if not quality of the trade. It, you know, the Astros farm system didn't have a whole lot before this deal. Now it sure doesn't have a whole lot, does it?
Yeah, it's I mean the it seems like the Astros really tried to volume the Orioles in this trade, and certainly any trade for the Orioles where they get rid of Miguel Tejada just about a day or two before this Mitchell report comes out.
Looks pretty smart right now.
Yeah, it looks smart, and they needed to dump his salary. They're not going to contend this year, no matter what the Orioles have expectations for this year. I think it's pretty clear that with the Red Sox, the Yankees in that division, and then the rest of the American League just getting so much stronger, they're not going to compete this year. They need to have a long-term plan, and getting rid of Tejada frees up a lot of money. It reduces a big commitment to Tejada. So in that respect, it was good. But in terms of the overall quality of some of the top prospects that they got in return, certainly nothing overwhelming when you're some of the prospects from the worst farm system in baseball, in my opinion.
I mean, Troy Patton could be, you know, he could fit into a rotation. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think you're expecting him to replace Eric Bedard if they go out and deal Bedard a little later, but he could fit in a rotation. Mike Costanzo is probably one of the more divisive players around the office when we're just talking about him. I mean, there are guys here in the office who like him, who think, you know, not think he's going to be an all-star by any stretch, but he's got power. He's got an arm. I mean, he's got some potential there. Other guys kind of wonder, okay, if you give him 550 at-bats, is he going to strike out 180 times? Is it going to be 200? You know, it does seem like that the main thing out of this for the Orioles is you get free of Miguel Tejada, and, hey, 5 rolls of the dice. You know, you've got 5 guys coming back. Maybe 2 of them turn into something, then that's something. But that Astros top 10 list is getting scarier by the day.
Yeah, it's looking rough. And I think with Tejada, it's just a perfect example of when you don't want to wait too long to trade a player. Because last year, I'm sure the Orioles were getting much better offers for Miguel Tejada. At this point, obviously, his value is much lower. And if this is the best package they could get, which I assume it was, given that they did make the trade, it's really not quite as palatable as something that they could have received a year ago if they had tried to trade Tejada back then, was when his value was a little bit higher.
It also spells out not the danger, but there are a lot of these free agent deals. If you go into a longer-term free agent deal, you need to go into it a lot of times knowing that there's a pretty good likelihood on the tail end of this that we're going to be – you're almost – we'll pay you this because we're going to get some good years out of you, and then we're going to be stuck with you at the end or close to it. And they weren't stuck with Miguel Tejada. He wasn't at that point where he's absolutely killing a team, but he's definitely not the Miguel Tejada that they signed, you know, to a free agent deal. I mean, the bat slows, the range gets a little shorter, and you see – I mean, you look at it from the Astros standpoint, it's interesting to see what they're going to be doing over the next couple of years. I mean, they're in a division where anyone can win it because there is no juggernaut. I mean, they're not definitely not in the AL East where you go, okay, well, we got to win 95 games to have a chance. But at the same time, I mean, depleting a farm system that was already depleted doesn't look good for 2008 and 2009.
Yeah, I just didn't get the trade from the Astros standpoint at all. I understand Miguel Tejada is a good player, but to take on all of his contract, and you already have one of the weakest farm systems in baseball, and to then just give away five guys who none of them, I don't think any of them are elite guys, but to still just trade away that depth in your farm system to try to win now. And I understand the National League Central is one of the weaker divisions in baseball, possibly the weakest. But I mean, the Cubs are getting better. They just made a big signing. The Brewers are they're not a bad team either. They
This
have
should
some
be the
good.
year that the Brewers, I mean, if last year they got close, next year may be the year that they take that Cleveland Indians jump where they go one step further. I mean, because that's a team full of young talent. I mean, and even if you look, the Reds are definitely not there yet, but you look at the Reds' future and they have a little bit brighter future because they do have a Jay Bruce, a Homer Bailey, a Johnny Cueto getting ready to slot in at the big league level. I mean, their hope is that they're a Brewers light from where the Brewers were 2 to 3 years ago, where they got a little more big league talent than the Brewers did at that point, but they have at least some hope for the future. Look at the Astros right now. It's going to be a lot of free agent signings over the next couple of years because there's not a whole lot of hope, it doesn't seem like, in that farm system.
Right, and I think that's the problem. They got older, and they at the same time dealt away the depth in their farm system, and whether they realistically have a chance to compete for the NL Central is not very good in my mind. And it just seems like they're spending a lot of money on talent that's not going to really help them win the next World Championship in Houston.
But as we get ready to wrap up this edition of the Baseball America podcast, to give you a little programming note on the website, we have the Giants top 10. The last of our National League top 10 prospects will go up on the site on Friday, which kind of an exciting day. We'll have a half, really a touch beyond halfway home. Got the American League, which will roll out beginning as essentially the start of New Year. We're going to take the week. Not going to have any chats 2 days before Christmas or something where a lot of you probably wouldn't be able to get to that, be a little busy. But we'll have more top tens rolling out starting the start of the new year. Giants tomorrow with Andy Baggerly's list, which, speaking of it, their farm system's improved, but the Giants definitely are also a team that they're maybe next year what the Astros they're looking at a point where they're really in the middle of a rebuilding process, and it's still got a ways to go.
I would agree with that.
They tried and to build something as long as they had Barry Bonds there, and now with Barry gone, they've got pitching, but there's not a whole lot of offense to come there.
Yeah, I think losing Barry Bonds is going to be a pretty dramatic hit to that offense.
But speaking of guys who were in the Mitchell Report, it all ties in.
It
But
all comes full circle.
thanks for listening to another edition of the Baseball America podcast. We'll be back again next week at our regularly scheduled time. Thanks a lot, guys.